Welcome back to the Hockey House Podcast, episode 139. I'm your host, Mackenzie Murphy, as we bring you the latest news from the ACHA and AAU college hockey offseason. Taking a couple weeks off, but the boys are back. It's slow this time of year, all right? There's not too much to cover in the ACHA, AAU college hockey world, so we took enough weeks off where we've built up enough content for a full episode, and it should make for a very special one. We'll throw it over to our guy, Collins, first. Collins, how are we doing this week?
Doing good. Keeping with the job hunt. Got to spend the weekend in LBI with my girlfriend. Tried wakeboarding for the first time. As somebody who used to be an avid skateboarder and somebody who's primarily a skier but been snowboarding a couple of times, I thought I would get it. She wiped the floor with me. She's insane at it. I ate shit repetitively and failed to stand up on the wakeboard. We're just going to keep at it with that and try to get better at that. But all in all, it's been a good 2 weeks.
Love LBI. Only been once. I mean, if you're looking for, I know it's supposed to get pretty hot on the East Coast this weekend, but that would be a perfect place to spend it. Fitzy, I know College World Series is on, so I'm sure you got ESPN rolling in the background at all times in your household.
It's the time of the season. College baseball is baseballing. My bracket is busted. I had North Carolina going to the chipper. They got eliminated today. Kind of a weird past 2 weeks for me, just kind of like nothing going on, but at the same time, like everything going on. Cicada season's in full swing here. I like to go for walks, and those things are, those little buggers will just climb up on you out of nowhere. Not much going on. A lot of men's league. I want to give a shout out to Alex Smatt, goaltender, graduated from John Carroll ACHA this past year. He just graduated, and he filled in and played tendy for us in a men's league game and stood on his head, got us the W. So shout out to Alex.
Dang, now I feel like I got to give a shout out. Collins, I don't know if you heard back, but I played against a couple Villanova guys in Boston the other night. We were playing the Red Rockets, and I guess they're the Frechette Tire rival in this Boston Summer League. A couple of the Villanova guys, I was talking to them after the game. It was a handful of Villanova guys, handful of UNH guys on the team, and we got to shoot the shit afterwards, so it was really good. And 2-2 tie in the game, so nobody came out on top. I've been going back and forth to Boston for the past couple of weeks. I started my new job, which I'm excited to announce. I talked about it a couple episodes ago, but I'm now full-time working as the digital media coordinator at the family business of Selly Hockey Co. So pretty pumped to be doing that. Like I mentioned, going back and forth between Boston for the summer, working hybrid before moving down there in September. So filling in on the Frechette Tire Boston team for the next couple weeks, playing out of Wellesley. So it's been a blast. A lot of miles. Had to go get my car fixed this week while I'm home. One of those things where you're traveling so much and then you finally get into the driveway and you notice that, you know, your tire pressure light's on, need an oil change, and time for new brakes. So we hit it all in one shebang this week up at the dealership. So I guess before we get to the news, we have some extra special news, and we've gotten some DMs over the past couple weeks asking, hey, are you guys going to do goal of the year this summer? Are you going to do photo of the year? You know, I'm a goalie. I haven't made a sick save. Like, are we doing save of the year? Yes, we're doing a bunch of those contests again. We'll get to that in a bit, but we are launching another new contest, and we're very excited about this one. Our first official contest of the summer, we are introducing the Put the Team on Their Back Award, presented by our friends at Rebirth Sports. Nobody understands the work that goes on behind the scenes of club hockey quite like the people and players of the ACHA and AAU college hockey. Whether you're a player scheduling buses and hotel rooms or a volunteer intern running the social media accounts, it truly takes a village to make it all happen. So in celebration of these all-stars that make club hockey run, the Hockey House Podcast has teamed up with Rebirth to give away Hockey House backpacks to the people in the ACHA and AAU college hockey who best exemplify what it takes to put the team on their back. If you would like to nominate somebody for this award, the Put the Team on Their Back Award, the link to that is live in our bio now. We're very fortunate enough to team up with Rebirth to get the whole team decked out for nationals this year. We didn't quite reach the minimum needed to do a backpack order, but Rebirth stepped up and sent us a couple extra, and all they asked was that they put them to good use. So what better way to put them to good use than to reward some of these people, these unsung heroes of club hockey? Like I mentioned, it could be a player, a coach, an intern, an operations person who's going through the extra effort behind the scenes to make everything run. We want to reward those people. I believe we have 5 backpacks to give away. So we'll go through the submission form. We'll find the best nominations. The form is pretty simple. You just got to fill out what team, you know, this person works for, what do they play for, what division, and then like 4 to 5 sentences. Why does this person put the team on their back? We're going to keep the submissions open until Sunday, June 30th at midnight. That's when they'll close, and then we'll announce the winners on Thursday, July 11th. Also on that week's podcast, it'll drop on Friday, July 12th. Some very exciting things Collins, you've seen firsthand. I mean, these are some solid heavy-duty backpacks that we're giving out here.
They are definitely quality. It has become my go-to gym bag. It does a surprisingly good job at keeping the stench out. Super comfortable. It's awesome. You definitely got to, you know, sign up for your friends or whatever, because they definitely deserve one of these.
Yeah, and it's been a while since the Hockey House crew has put their heads together to decide, assemble a team like this. I think back a couple years ago, we did the Hockey House Pod All-Stars, and we sat over a spreadsheet and decided who was in and who was out. And we're going to do that again. We'll narrow it down to five people who have stood out and put the team on their back this past season. So very excited, looking forward to that. In early July, we'll also do our Save of the Year. We didn't get a chance to do that last summer, so we'll start with the goalies this year. Early July, we'll do Save of the Year. Late July, we'll do Goal of the Year. And then as August rolls around, we'll get into our Photo of the Year competition, since it was so successful last season as well. So very excited about this one. Again, thank you to Rebirth. I think no better way than to reward the people behind the scenes in club hockey. So we'll get to the headlines this week. UCO gets their new head coach. We talked about this on a couple of different episodes. Probably one of the best jobs in the ACHA. UCO, a school that probably doesn't appreciate their ACHA M1 team as much as they should, given the success of that program, but a rabid fan base, a team that is in the top five every year in the conversation when it's national tournament time. Most recently, the head coach of the Midwest Blackbirds in the USPHL Premier. This was back in 2021-2022. That, of course, would be Coach Tom Philbin, who will step in behind the bench for the Broncos next season. His ACHA experience includes the head coach at Florida Gulf Coast and Penn State, both ACHA M2, 1 year at each of those programs. So programs pretty storied in the ACHA, and he's joining another one in Oklahoma at UCO here. Another big head coach vacancy filled over the past couple of weeks, that would be San Diego State. They hit a home run with their head coaching hire. The Aztecs announced that Dean Wilson is the program's next head coach. He's a native of San Diego. Wilson has played professional hockey on ice and in the roller rink after playing Division II college hockey at Bemidji State University, skated for the San Diego Gulls, the Bakersfield Fog, the Bakersfield Condors, the Fresno Falcons, and the Tucson Gill Monsters of the now former West Coast Hockey League. As part of the Roller Hockey International, he skated with the San Diego Barracudas, the Tampa Bay Rolling Thunder, and the Sacramento River Rats, and he won gold with Team USA at the IIHF Roller Hockey Championships. He has over 20 years of coaching experience at the junior, high school, and college level, and hopes to lead the Aztecs to new heights in 2024-25. Couple things stand out to me, and I'm curious to see what you guys think. You guys both play in the ACHA. You know what it takes. Collins, you certainly know what it takes to find a coach who cares enough at the ACHA level. They clearly got a guy who loves hockey. There's no doubt about it. You just see the teams crawling around minor hockey, crawling around roller hockey. A guy familiar with the West Coast understands the market that San Diego State is in, you know, what it takes to be a hockey fan in that area. They'd have that checked. But again, you need somebody who really loves hockey. The same way that coaches, when they're recruiting ACHA, you got to find the guys who love the game. And they have clearly found a coach who loves the game. So I'm really looking forward to what San Diego State has in store for next season.
There's been a lot of talk from them, whether it's on Instagram or having played against them. There's always been a good amount of chatter about how good they can be or how good they should be. And they're going to make some noise. And it's been two pretty lackluster seasons. This coach has seen some pretty high levels of hockey, so I think it would be interesting to see what happens. And I think it's very important that we have good teams on the West Coast to help grow the game out there. I'm really interested to see what happens.
Fitzy, maybe a couple more years and you might have this minor hockey league resume that Coach Wilson has. Like, what do you think it speaks to his character in terms of, you know, how long he played minor league hockey and the number of teams he played for?
It's unreal when you're looking on the outside, looking in, like it's all just kind of like sunshine and rainbows and fun playing minor pro and above. But it's, you know, it's a grind day in and day out. You guys know how important a coach is to a team, and like he can win games for you, he can lose games for you. Perfect example is the coach that came into Indiana and, you know, kind of righted the ship there and led them to their eventual championship last season. You know, for him to turn around after playing, and obviously he's coached in different teams before, but to take on the task of a, you know, ACHA squad, it should be interesting. And the students there should be just licking their chops, because they got a good setup there with a coach like that. I would have loved to have that when I was at Indiana.
Yeah, and we got to give Coach Weiss a shout out too, because he's moving on at Indiana as well, so we should mention that. That's another great job that's up for grabs in the ACHA. Not many coaches get to walk in, you know, automatically try to repeat for a title. The boys at Hoosier Hockey are now looking for a head coach and assistant coaches for next season as well. So they have that available on their Instagram at hockey at IU. So be sure to check that out as well. Other news here, Niagara dropped their first independent schedule after a couple seasons in the ESCHL. Niagara University ACHA M1 has packed their schedule with top 5 to 15 teams. They got Stony Brook on there twice, Maryville, Liberty on there twice, Adrian, Ohio, two series against Pitt. Should be a very exciting season for the Purple Eagles. They have a lot of familiar faces on the schedule as well. You got RIT, Oswego, Syracuse, Buffalo, Canisius. So a combination of former conference foes and some independents too. You know, you got Liberty and Ohio in there as well. And nice to see Adrian's going to make the trip out to Niagara for a couple games. But I'm automatically looking at this second game on the schedule as an easy game of the week in the future here. Friday night, September 27th, the midnight game. Niagara will host Oswego in a rematch of one of the biggest upsets in ACHA M1 national tournament history when the Lakers took down Niagara in the first round just this past season. Collins, you already raising your hand to jump on this topic, but this is going to be a fun one to watch.
Fun is going to be an understatement. This is going to be a chippy bloodbath. This is going to be such a fun game to watch, and I'm already marking my calendar.
Yeah, we might have to find a way to get out to this one because, their midnight game last year against Buffalo was electric. The crowd looked better than what they draw for NCAA games, so I'm sure it'll be just as hyped next season, kicking things off with the second home game of the year against Oswego State. One of those teams we just mentioned is Stony Brook. The Seawolves made some headlines this past week, coming out with this big statement that they're ready to usher in a new era of Stony Brook hockey. After taking a step back in 2023-24, Stony Brook's ACHA M1 team is getting ready to turn the page. Head coach Chris Garofalo said, "This will be one of the best groups of incoming players we've ever had. They've already announced that they will take to the ice with redesigned primary jerseys this fall for the first time since 2012. The uniform update comes 1 year following the introduction of a Navy third jersey, which will remain part of the program's collection next season. But new home and away jerseys will be unveiled on social media later this offseason." A team, honestly, it doesn't feel like too long ago that we were talking about which teams desperately need a new jersey redesign. And I don't even know if we mentioned Stony Brook, but they've had the BU look for a while now, and they are going to be getting a fresh new look, which I'm very excited to see what they do there. They are also forming an alumni association. They will honor previous eras throughout the 2024-25 season. With the recent formation of the Stony Brook Hockey Alumni Association, they're going to do eras nights. They've divided up the 55 years of Stony Brook hockey into three eras. They have the Patriots from 1969 to 1994, paying homage to Stony Brook's old nickname before they switched to the Seawolves. You have the New Heights era from 94 to 09. And then they're calling it the D1 Dynasty from 09 to 2024. I don't know about Dynasty. You know, they haven't won a national championship yet. They're clearly trying to get there. I would have maybe rephrased that as Eschel Dynasty. They've won a bunch of titles in that. So that's my one critique there. But they did have a very sick hype video, which was very well done. Again, 55 years of a hockey tradition at Stony Brook looking to turn the page. We got to give a shout out to the UNC Tar Heels. They are starting a women's program that'll join the ACC Women's Division next year. Launching in 2023-24, the Tar Heels are currently looking for enrolled students to join the team, and you can give them a follow on Instagram at UNC Women's Hockey. They're not the only ones launching a women's team next year. Got to give a shout out to the Gators. An Instagram post from at UFW Hockey, the Gators have announced that they are looking for players interested in joining the team. No official word on what league and what level, but you already got College Hockey South commenting on the post that they can't wait. So we'll keep an eye on the Florida Gators for next season as they look to rally some female students to get a team together. So looking forward to seeing that. Interesting story here that Herm threw on the notes that I think is worth spotlighting. Aquinas recently had a 5-sport athlete commit for hockey and lacrosse. We're talking about Evan Doan. The AQ men's lacrosse and men's hockey teams are thrilled to announce that Evan Doan will be suiting up for the Saints next season. Spent the last two seasons playing in the USPHL Premier for the Minnesota Moose. Doan comes to Aquinas after playing 5 sports in high school. Played 16 years for the Evansville Thunder, including 4 years on the varsity team. He also played lacrosse, football, baseball, and track for the Harrison Raiders. I got to look more into this high school, but a 5-sport athlete in the day and age of kids specializing in one sport when they turn 12, we got a 5-sport high school athlete, which I think is phenomenal. Fitzy, you're a big advocate for playing multiple sports here, you know, coming from a baseball hockey family here. This kid's playing 5 sports in high school, you have to think he's going to be a utility guy in the locker room.
It's definitely a big thing for athleticism. I'm just looking at like I don't know much about track. I would assume it's done in the when the weather's somewhat good in the spring or summer, but like lacrosse lines up right with baseball season, and then football usually lines up with the hockey season. So what happens when it's like got the big Friday night lights game for football, and then there's a big tilt for hockey that just conflicts? I wonder what he did all those times.
I know in New Hampshire, football and hockey didn't overlap because you had in the fall, and then hockey was in the winter, and they made sure to give a break there. But I'm with you too. Like baseball and lacrosse are definitely spring, and I'd like to think track is a spring sport. So maybe it was winter track, or you know, maybe he was so good in an event that they just let him do it in the springtime. We'll have to dive in and find out more about Evan's story, but a really cool one worth spotlighting. And we're going to take that spotlight and turn it over to the transfer portal because we have a couple more updates this week. We have a Division III defenseman going from SUNY Fredonia to Calvin. That'll be defenseman Aleem Demirnov. He has experience in the WSHL and the SIJHL, had limited minutes for Fredonia for the past 2 seasons, only appeared in 9 games with the Blue Devils. So wishing him the best of luck in his new journey out in Michigan. And then we have ACHA to NCAA. This isn't a transfer. You know, we do want to give some congratulations to former Penn State ACHA M2 goaltender John Serfarth, who is signing with the NCAA team. He posted a .907 save percentage in 11 appearances for Penn State during the 2023-24 ACHA M2 season. Heading into his junior year, Collins, I got to throw it over here as the goalie guy, but he goes from 11 appearances last year. Now he's going to the NCAA team. You got to think that's less ice time and more weight room. I'm curious how he's going to adapt to this.
It's probably been a good amount of ice time, though, because he's probably been practicing with the team, you know, when they need an extra goalie. I feel like it's the only position you see at least once a season. We're seeing a call-up mid-season or early in the season. Maybe some of these D1 teams are maybe bringing guys on saying, hey, come, you're going to play club, you know, we could have you try out and stuff like that.
I'm curious how much the transfer portal plays in this happening more often now, because I wonder if Penn State lost a goalie and then they're maybe waiting on somebody to come in the portal. They can't find who they're looking for in the portal, and they really don't want to bring in a guy as a freshman and say, hey, you're not going to play that much. It's a lot easier to kind of just call up that ACHA goalie and fill that spot. That's what I'm just thinking from the outside. I mean, you got to think he's getting a brand new pad set up, being with the NCAA team. Like, that's got to be fun as a goalie, get whole new gear in the offseason. And, you know, he might not be getting as much ice time in games, but he's certainly going to get a lot of rubber in practice. So looking forward to watching his journey. Turn things over now to our stick tap segment of the show. Starting off, we talked about this team a couple times now. Former Stony Brook captain Angelo Cerce. Cerce was recently named the New Jersey Devils skating coach. Played 3 seasons at Stony Brook from 2006 to 2009 and played in the Fed for 1 season after graduation in 2010-11 with the New York Aviators. He's currently the director and lead instructor for Pro Stride. I mean, definitely a guy we're going to have to get on the pod, especially if we're talking about the eras of Stony Brook hockey. He's clearly a prime candidate for that. So stick taps to Cerce for getting that gig. Again, we're going to have to hear more about that story. Also want to give stick taps to Alabama hockey, all the hockey teams at Alabama, because the Frozen Tide have now been featured not once, but twice in Alabama football recruiting graphics. London Simmons, a 4-star recruit the other day, committed with a poster that featured him wearing an Alabama hockey jersey. And then you had Dawson Merritt the other day, who went on an official visit and included photos of him rocking the Bama jersey as well. So some free publicity for the Frozen Tide. So we got to give them a shout out. Also want to give some stick taps to former Central Michigan broadcaster Nick Blesser. Blesser is set to become the Cleveland Monsters' new digital content coordinator. During his time in Mount Pleasant, he created the Central Michigan D3 Hockey Club Radio Network from scratch. So the network covered everything CMU Division III club hockey, from live radio broadcasts, social media, post-game reports, graphic design, and more. The network also got him recognized at a national level, recognized as one of the top broadcasters in the ACHA 2 years in a row. He spent the last season with the Omaha Lancers in the USHL. And then lastly, we want to give some stick taps to our new friends at Casper Sports. Shout out to Casper for hooking up the boys with some custom jerseys this past week. It's been a while since we had the chance to jump on and talk, but I mean, you guys nailed it with the unboxing videos, but I want to get your thoughts once again. Fitzy, I'll throw it over to you. Second Hockey House Pod jersey going up on the wall soon. And what are your thoughts on the new custom jersey?
I wasn't sure what to expect when you said something was coming my way. I was actually in Indianapolis watching Ryan play baseball, so I was excited to get home. And it's kind of got like a winter classic take to me. It felt like one like a kind of a throwback, something you'd see at an outdoor game. So I absolutely love it. I'll probably be bringing it with me wherever I end up this winter, so I have it when I play some Pond. It's pretty sick.
Yeah, I really like the stretchiness to it, but it was also stitched, right? It wasn't like a cheap sublimated jersey, and I feel like, Collins, you kind of mentioned that when you pulled it right out of the bag.
It's super comfortable. I might have to do a little beach photo shoot with it or something. I don't know. I wish I had the saucer toss, but they're awesome. I'm so excited. Hopefully there's some more cool stuff in the works with them. There was definitely a winner in terms of reaction videos, and I think we all know who it was, who won. He's the king of it.
He's the content king. I mean, there's a reason the four of us got jerseys and we had one more to send out. Like, who we going to besides Timmy K? You know, he's staying hot, doing his 90 takes of summer right now. He's in prime mid-season form, and he did a great unboxing as well. Gave us a little action shot in there. That's it for Stick Taps. We do have a full hammering a hot seat this week, so we want to make sure we get to that as well. Starting things off with a very interesting story. The first seat on the hot seat goes to Hiram College. Pretty wild story here in the college hockey world. So on June 6th, the job posting on the American Hockey Coaches Association, not to be confused with ACHA, we're talking AHCA, their website revealed that Hiram College plans to add NCAA Division III men's ice hockey in 2025-26. Now, at the time, the Liberal Arts College in Hiram, Ohio had not made a formal announcement. The school announced the addition of a club team back in July of 2023, but failed to assemble a team in time to compete in the 23-24 AAU college hockey season this past year. They're supposed to play in the UNYCHL. After saying that they had played there, the UNYCHL actually reached out to us and said Hiram never played in the UNYCHL. In fact, they pulled out a month before the season would have started because they did not have enough players. So the Terriers did not play last season, even though they announced they were going to have a club hockey team. They even unveiled jerseys and everything. They hired a coach. No dice, though. On June 7th, Hiram Athletics announced the addition of three new varsity sports, women's lacrosse, women's bowling, and men's ice hockey. They will set to begin play in 2025-26 for their inaugural season under Dr. Curto, who is a professor at the university. Prior to coaching at Hiram, Dr. Curto was the associate head coach of Eastern Kentucky University, ACHA Division III. While at EKU, the Colonels won their first ever Bourbon Barrel Trophy, which is played annually against the University of Kentucky. The Colonels also played in the Indiana Collegiate Hockey Conference championship game against Indiana's D3 team. Hiram's men's ice hockey team will host games at the Pond Ice Rink and Sports Complex in Chargon Falls, Ohio. Dr. Curto will serve as the head coach as they begin recruiting a team to fill out the next academic year. So, kind of a crazy story. You have a university who fully gets behind having a club hockey team, but runs out of time to put a team on the ice. They never even get a club team on the ice before they're announcing that they're going to go NCAA Division III. They are having one of the professors on campus coach the team and do all the recruiting. You know, he has some club hockey coaching experience, and now he's going to lead this NCAA team. So kind of a crazy situation. Again, it all kind of ties back to club hockey. You had them announcing that they were going to be in AAU. They never end up playing here, but kind of just a wild story. And Collins, I guess from our perspective of it, you know, we're pumped that they're adding another team to college hockey, but I'm really curious to see how many guys are going to be able to recruit to Northeast Ohio.
Somebody said this is going to be a shit show to the likes of Daniel Webster, rest in peace, and Bryn Athyn. I'm very, very curious to see what happens, especially from a coaching situation too, because I mean, ACHA D3 in Eastern Kentucky is a hell of a lot different than NCAA D3. This is going to be fascinating to see what happens. I don't want to be too much of a pessimist. I have a feeling this is going to be like watching a car crash in slow motion. There's nothing you can do to stop it. It's just going to happen.
And again, I think that's a perfect opportunity. Like, that's why we're throwing them on the hot seat, because they haven't really proven themselves now, and they're already jumping up to another level. So it's kind of like a show me moment. Like, show us some stuff that we can be confident in this team hitting the ice in the fall of 2025. So we'll keep an eye on that. We won't get too far into it. Of course, we'll keep you updated if we hear anything else. But another team going on the hot seat. And Collins, you know this more than anyone else. What is my biggest social media pet peeve?
Almost Friday.
I can't stand it. I love Friday beers. Don't get me wrong. I love the content. Peak COVID, Friday beers was like the light at the end of the tunnel. Just talking about sucking down with the fellas and having a cold one. Obviously, every team loves to do the Almost Friday. You find a funny photo, you put the Almost Friday font. But I think we reached our final straw with the Almost Friday content, because you had Rutgers University Camden tossing up all caps on just random photos Almost Friday. Just a disaster. It's going on the hot seat because I can't take this anymore. Especially too, some of these teams, you got great photo content, and you know, us social media guys, we go looking for photos of your team and we can't find anything that doesn't have Almost Friday spelled out on it. So throwing them on the hot seat again, and we'll kind of get into the social media talk in this week's interview, so I won't say too much, but Collins, I'll let you chime in a little bit.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, I love Friday beers and the way that brand has changed from just being the funny college kind of drinking meme page to now like this kind of great enterprise with Billy and Chet, Angus, Will Donnellan, Rusty. It's awesome. I love their podcasts. They're, you know, really, really killing it. The damage they have done to ACHA and AAU college hockey, social media is irreparable. And I demand an apology video with tears.
Well, I think that's a great segue into our interview, because like I mentioned, we talk a little bit of social media and what goes into running a great social media page, especially from a player's perspective. And of course, that would be our interview with recent Vanderbilt graduates Julian Yang and Andrew Shearson coming up next. We're pleased to be joined by two former members of Vanderbilt University's hockey team, recent graduates Julian Yang and Andrew Shearson. Yanger, Shearson, welcome to the Hockey House Pod.
Thanks for having us out today. We're stoked to be on.
It's a long time coming, getting you guys on. Julian, I met you, is it almost 2 years ago at Nationals in Marlboro? You came out?
Yeah, it was like at NESC 2023, March, something like that. Saw you wearing the gear, came up to you, just wanted to say hi, and the rest is history, I guess. But saw that the ACHA had their national tournament there, so I was like, this is bound to be a good week of hockey.
Yeah, it definitely was. And it was great to see you there. And then Shearson, we were joking, like, you two just been in the DMs for a while. Just like, I mean, it's the story of club hockey. You got to scratch and claw for everything. And now we finally got you guys on the pod.
It took a lot of DMs back and forth between Yang and I to get Vandy represented on the podcast. But we're happy to be here today. Better late than never, right?
Yeah, stoked to have you guys on here. And maybe we can get a little more in depth now that you guys you're off the roster now. So Yang, let's throw it over to you. You mentioned being from Chelmsford, Mass. You know, how did you get into hockey? You went to private school for a bit. Like, talk about that process.
Yeah, I mean, I started out just going to learn to skate. I think my parents weren't thinking too far ahead of that down the road there. So they just sent me to Chelmsford Forum learn to skate program. And after about a year and a half of that and whatnot, everyone in my class was going to learn to play hockey. And so from there, just started picking up, tried out for teams and played around AAA teams around Massachusetts and, you know, kind of bounce around teams here and there throughout youth hockey and whatnot. But yeah, I ended up my way at St. Mark's. I wasn't really like the biggest kid going into high school. So junior year, I was able to make the team, you know, wasn't really getting a whole lot of looks, but I was still able to kind of play summer tournaments and fall prep and whatnot. And so that really got me thinking about potentially playing juniors and trying to like grind my way through and going to play D3 hockey. But, you know, at the same time, there was also like the academic consideration as well. I ended up deciding to play club and applying to school and going to Vanderbilt. So Shearson and I both played prep. So we actually played against each other in small school my senior year. I think we were like the first seed or something going against number 8 Pomfret, which is where Shearson was at the time. And they were actually able to upset us. So Shearson likes to tell that story a lot in the locker rooms. Going into senior year, coming out, I was thinking about going to play juniors and trying to grind that out. I had like 3 gap years on hand. So, you know, I had plenty of time to try to go down that road against the advice of my teachers and going to juniors and all that. They were just like, just focus on school for now. And, you know, club hockey is a very competitive world. And you're bound to like play against some really good players. So focus on school, prioritize that, and then, you know, apply early decision to Vanderbilt. And, you know, at the time it was like, you know, thinking that I was letting go of an opportunity to really live out that college hockey dream and being able to play. But, you know, looking back at it 4 years later, I don't regret any of it. And I'm really happy with where I ended up.
What was your thought process there when you were applying to schools? Were you looking at schools that had club hockey? Were you just looking at schools and you're like, if they don't have a team, I'll find a way to start a team? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, like some of the schools that I was looking at. So I was considering applying to Cornell as well. And I know that they've had like a very strong club program for many years now. And I knew Vanderbilt had it, but like, you know, at the time there weren't like a whole lot of, you know, social media outlets. There wasn't a lot of publicity surrounding the team and the program. So I wasn't really sure what I was getting myself into. But yeah, I think like I was definitely looking at schools that had the opportunity to play hockey. And I think Vanderbilt was just the perfect combination of school, hockey, being in a great city and all that kind of added up, and it was the perfect recipe.
And Shearson, your path to Vanderbilt was a little less smooth there. We got to talk about this one. You Chicago kid, you played Chicago high school hockey. What is that like? Because Julie and I are guys from the Northeast. Like, what does Illinois high school hockey look like?
It's top team heavy for sure. There's a couple powerhouses year in, year out. You got the school I went to, Loyola, is usually pretty good. Yeah, Jesuit school in Wilmette, Illinois, just north of the city. And then right next door to us, you got New Trier, who's winning every year for the most part. A couple towns over, you got Glenbrook North, Glenbrook South, who are also pretty good, Stevenson. A couple other of the Catholic teams are good, but there's a disparity between, you know, the top to the bottom, whereas, you know, boarding school, as Yang alluded to, is much more, you know, anybody can beat anyone on any given night. But on the other side of that, it's fun. You know, we played probably twice the amount of games as a prep team would play. We played 72 my junior year. They did the finals for a state championship in the United Center, which was cool. My team won it that year. Definitely was on the bench for that one, so I can't take too much credit. And the next year, too, we lost to our rival, New Trier, which was a tough pill to swallow, too. I didn't get to play that one either because I was hurt. But yeah, definitely an untraditional route for me. I didn't really get to play a whole lot in high school because I was playing football, too. So I didn't really get to start until my senior year. And then I played really well, and then I got hurt going into the playoffs in my senior year. So I kind of just wanted to, you know, give myself one more year of trying to get recruited. Just because in Illinois, you can't really get recruited out of high school hockey because the best players have gone played junior hockey, or, you know, they're already playing Division I after already playing, you know, juniors beforehand. So I was late to the party of getting recruited, and I went out to a small school in Connecticut called Pomfret, where I met with the coach. They were confident that I'd see a lot of net there, and that was kind of my biggest decision-making. Biggest factor in deciding where I was going to go to school was just making sure I'd get some playing time. Played well there, was fortunate enough to secure a spot at Middlebury, where I stayed for a year and a half. I really liked it there. Great school, great athletic facility. Couldn't say enough about the place. But ended up tearing my hamstring right before my sophomore season. None of the NESCAC or most of D3 didn't play at all in that 2020-21 year. We were eager to play that year, and then tearing the hamstring right before the season. Just had a tough conversation with my coach where, you know, he wasn't sure if I'd be the guy ever. Kind of took my chances in the transfer portal, not for hockey. Was fortunate enough to get into Vanderbilt halfway through my sophomore year. Had my whole life flip upside down where I was playing Division III hockey in the woods of Vermont to, you know, go into an SEC school in downtown Nashville. Had to sit the rest of the year out for club hockey just because, you know, I was still recovering from my hamstring, but I had my sights set on playing my junior year when I got the campus that year.
It's funny because we I don't want to say we rag on NCAA Division III hockey. You've heard of the schools, right? There's a couple in Connecticut where it's like, you know, they'll commit like 12 kids out of the EHL every year and then half of them get cut. Middlebury is not one of those schools though. Like that is, when you're talking about some of the best programs in NCAA Division III hockey, not only being up in Vermont, but that was kind of a crazy time. We got to rewind a little bit because I bet you guys both have some interesting stories. You know, I played at Syracuse. We had a bunch of guys who went right from prep school. It seemed like we got a little more prep school guys than junior hockey guys. And I think like there's very niche stories that come out of going to New England prep school and playing hockey. Shearson, I'll throw it over to you because it sounds like you had an incident against Loomis Chaffee that might still haunt you to this day.
Yeah. If I hopped on this podcast and a couple of my boarding school buddies heard it without me telling the story, they'd be pretty mad at me. But one of my first games at Pomfret, we were playing Loomis Chaffee at the time, which is a big boarding school in Connecticut. They're just a hockey powerhouse year in, year out. And my Pomfret team was playing them at home after winning our first couple games. And they were ranked number one. And we were playing really well. We were winning like 1-0 late in the third period. And they scored a nice goal. Kind of threw me over the point on the power play. Wasn't mad about that, but I go to play the puck behind the net with like 30 seconds left. This kid on Loomis kind of just takes the puck from me. And I just taps it in for the easiest game-winning goal with 25 seconds left. My coach pulls me with like 15 seconds left, you know, after they dropped the puck again. And I'm just breaking my stick in every way possible, just like swearing my head off. I look over my shoulder. There's like a dad and like
three kids just staring at me like I'm the biggest monster on the planet. Horrible game. Last one in the locker room. I kid you not, I think I sat with my gear on for like 6 to 7 hours to like 3-4 in the morning. Didn't listen to the rink custodian or anyone. And my coach, funny enough too, I played pretty well that game besides the big mistake. And my coach is like, Shearsy, you got a couple college coaches out here. Like, you'd be dumb not to come out and talk to them. I didn't even think about it. I just kept my head in my jersey. One of the darkest moments for me, but all my Pomfret buddies, when they see me, they'll dap me up and say, what's up, Loomis? Good to see you, buddy. Just moments like that, which kind of bring hockey teams close together. We had a good year that year. And it's funny enough, because that all ended, they stopped calling me Loomis when we blew a 3-1 New England championship lead in the finals to Gunnery. So then they started calling me Gunnery. Didn't get much better for me.
I mean, I think that's how it works. If you make it anywhere in hockey, your biggest nightmares will probably go back to boys prep school hockey. Yang, anything from you? Like any big memories from St. Mark's? Maybe some big games you had there?
You know, like Shears was talking about his time playing at Loyola, I didn't get a whole lot of time off the bench. So playing time was a very, very special occurrence for me. Best memory from St. Mark's. Not as good of a story as Shears' Loomis story. I remember we were playing BB&N at home, and it was like the day that like the early decision results came out for Vandy. After second period, I'm sitting in our locker room, turned to one of my buddies and I was like, yo, like the decisions are out. And he's like, you're not going to check right now. Like you're going to go out and you're going to score a goal and you're going to get into Vandy, man. It's all going to be good. And so I'm like, all right, like say what you want. Like coach is rolling four lines. We're getting good looks, but like no puck luck so far. So there's like 5 minutes left in the game. And this kid, like he's like an eighth defenseman, like coach gave him the call up that game because he was like trying to get guys in. He scores the 12th goal of the game from like the blue line off like the softest muffin, and I'm like, shit, like if this kid scores before me, like, and I don't score this game, like I'm not gonna live myself down. Sure enough, like 2 minutes later, I'm on a 3-on-2 just kind of hanging back. Puck just squirts out to me and I was able to just bury the 13th goal of the game. So, you know, that's my only goal of prep school hockey, but it's a good story. And later that night I got into Vanderbilt. So a little cherry on top action there. But I think that about sums up my prep school hockey experience, just getting garbage minutes, scoring somewhat irrelevant goals. But hey, they don't ask how, they ask how many, right? So
kind of fast forward here. Yanger, talk about your welcome to club hockey moment when you got to Vandy. A little bit of a different time when you guys came into college. The world looked pretty different, but did you have kind of like a welcome to Vandy hockey moment?
Freshman year, we didn't play at all. So yes, that was kind of a rude awakening. You know, sophomore year, the first like real series that we played was against Bama's, now their AAU D1 team. And I think like it was like the first period going back to support the D-man, trying to wheel around the back of the net. I think TJ Lancaster just comes around the net and just fucking buries me. And I'm like just down in the ice, down for like 3 minutes. Like I was winded, so I couldn't get up, but I was just like, I just couldn't catch my breath. I was just like stunned. I was like, this is a very much a welcome to club hockey moment and a preview of things to come for sure. That was definitely not the last time that I was going to get my ass rocked like that. But if there was one moment early on, that was definitely it.
Shearson, what about for you? Because you had seen what college hockey looks like on the NCAA side. You played at a school that had a rink on campus, all the facilities in the world, and now all of a sudden you're playing college hockey in Nashville. What was your welcome to club hockey moment?
So we played our first game, my first game, against Ole Miss at home. We bring fans, you know, a good amount of games, but we didn't have any at that game, so I didn't really get a full taste of what this club hockey experience would be like. We played the following weekend at Middle Tennessee State in Antioch, Tennessee, and they bring a lot of fans to their games. And if you closed your eyes and imagine what their fans would look like, I'm sure those were the people that were banging on the glass behind me. I give up 3 goals in the first like 5 minutes of that game. We go down 3-0. I'm almost looking at my bench. I'm like, I was just playing Division III hockey and now I'm looking at my bench in the first period against MTSU waiting to get pulled. Like, what the hell is going on? We end up coming back winning 4-3. I didn't let up another goal that game and we played really well. But our whole team was just like kind of just giving it to those fans and right behind us. And they were like trying to break through the glass, big bearded dudes wearing flannels, just yelling God knows what at me. But that was kind of like my wow, like welcome to club hockey. And then, you know, a couple of alumni happened to be in town that weekend and they brought a couple pitchers of beers in after. So that was just like, damn, this is pretty cool. Maybe I should have left a year earlier, but I left at the right time. But that was definitely my welcome to club experience.
That's awesome. You know, we get a lot of guys on here and, you know, people love to talk about the fans at Georgia or South Carolina. It's the first time the Middle Tennessee folks are getting a shout out. So we love that.
They're good. Them in Huntsville too. Huntsville,
They don't travel in a big pack, but those Huntsville fans, you can hear them from miles away.
Walk us through you being the club president as a sophomore. How did you fall into that role after, you know, being on campus freshman year and not playing a single game, and all of a sudden now you're the club president?
We like run based on calendar years, so like you kind of take over halfway through. But freshman year, I was like the secretary. Like I was just like, I want to be social media manager, like revamp the social media, make this team, you know, try to get better players, trying to get more fans out to games. You know, I started with there, and then the president at the time, Trevor White, just kind of gave me a little more responsibility, you know, helping him with dealing with club things and problems that came up. It got to a point where like we were just kind of like running the show, the two of us, and he was going abroad the next year. So he wanted to just kind of pass off the reins. Didn't happen to be anyone that was like as involved. Was lucky enough to where I came in, you know, with that COVID year, just because like the team was just all over the place, and I was able to like get close with the exec team and just kind of like weasel my way in. But yeah, I mean, it's just like started out doing like a little small job, social media, scheduling, like rides and stuff like that. And, you know, eventually like just kind of like no one else wanted to do the job. So I just kind of stepped in and fill Trevor's shoes.
There we go. And then one more thing before Shearson got there that you got to talk about is this outdoor game at Nissan Stadium, because I mean that feels like so long ago that the Preds had a stadium series game against the Lightning there. How did you guys end up playing a game there against Middle Tennessee?
Yeah, so when that game was announced back in like July, I sent Trevor a text in media. I was like, yo, we got to get on this, like see if we can play. Because I knew there was like some club teams, I knew like college teams have done, you know, that in the past where they've played after NHL teams. So I was like, all right, this is a good opportunity for us to like try to make a memory we would all remember forever. But, you know, like we kind of put out a feeler text, our texts and emails out there just to different people through Ford Ice Center. It kind of wasn't really picking up steam, and it was like almost towards November and December, it was just quiet. MTSU's president Jackson Taylor and I kind of just like put the pressure on. We're like, hey, like if we can do this game, like we just got to keep pressuring them. And eventually, like, you know, what Ford Ice Center was planning this whole time, they weren't talking to us, was like they apparently had 5 hours of ice the next day after the game was over. They were planning on doing little pro, like getting everyone out. So I think they had like a high school all-star game. They had like a day where all the Ford Ice Center, the Preds employees could go out for like a free skate and all these like different things. And they made sure that we would get out there to play against MTSU, just, you know, the two local Nashville teams. So they gave us like an hour of ice time, which is not enough for an actual game. So it was kind of like a little all over, like it wasn't really official, but it was also official. You know, the other thing was they weren't letting us hit. So that also made the game feel a little bit different. I don't think they wanted the liability of someone getting hurt playing at Nissan and potentially suing the stadium. So they were just like, yeah, no contact. But like, luckily the refs just came to our bench and they're just like, yeah, we'll let them play. You know, if there's something egregious, we'll call it, but just like, you know, try to not kill each other, but we'll let things slide. So all in all, it was just a really good experience. You know, it was really special for the Preds organization and especially Ford Ice Center to just get us out there. You know, certainly wasn't like NC State or UNC where they were filling the entire lower bowl. They did limit each team to bringing 100 fans. So a little bit of a kicker there, but you know, we're not complaining being able to play outdoors.
You got the Instagram post. That's all that matters though.
Yeah, we got the Instagram post, you know, get that up, get some likes, get some engagement. And
well, Shearson, you gave a shout out to the Middle Tennessee fans already. I gotta hear the story about you giving the fans free ice cream at Auburn.
This is one of my like first weekends too on the Vandy Club hockey team. And that weekend, most of our team took a little van down that seated like 16 guys, and the grad students and a couple of the upperclassmen drove down. Me and my buddies got there, a couple of my senior friends at the time who graduated last year. We were just hanging out at this random carnival right outside the rink in Columbus, Georgia, because Auburn does not play even close to their campus. They play, you know, 45 minutes northwest, I believe, to Columbus, Georgia. So we're hanging out just like eating confetti, you know, pies or whatever you want to call them. My buddies are eating like hot dogs before we're about to play Auburn. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be a bad one. We get out there first shift. We only had like 14 guys that weekend for whatever reason. It was just like a midterm week. Our first line winger just gets conkied first shift, gets blown up by two Auburn players right behind our net. And I'm like, holy shit, this is going to be like brutal. First period, we're down like 2-0. Yang's throwing up, half our team's throwing up like in the trash can. Yang's sick. Borsma, the freshman, was hurt, concussion. We had like 11 guys and we battle their asses off and we go down like 4-3 and we're like fighting for an empty net at the end of the game. And then they score an empty net. We were looking for an equalizer. They score the empty net. 5-3, I go back in the net and I'm just like, whatever. Like we gave it a good game, you know, They had a full roster. We had 12 guys. We're on the road. Like, this is pretty impressive, honestly. And then my best friend on that team at the time, with 55 seconds left in the game, I looked up the box score to make sure I was right. Just slew foots a kid on Auburn. So they're back on the power play. They already have like 75 shots on net. They want one more on me. I kid you not, I freeze the puck like six times in between that 45 seconds where the penalty was taken to the last buzzer, the third period. They scored with 0.1 seconds left on a tip-in from the point, and the place erupts. And I'm like, what's going on? You guys are up 3 goals. It's 6-3. Like, what could this possibly be about? Like, this is a joke. Like, why are you rubbing it on me? Like, I've had a bad night. The announcer hops on the PA and it's like, with that Auburn Tigers goals, everyone in attendance gets free ice cream across the street at CC's Bakery or some shit. And I'm just like, holy fuck. So now I just gave everyone free ice cream. Like, this just went from a minute ago, me being the net, being proud. I'm like, wow, this is a great effort. To, wow, this is like the worst night of my life. I just gave everyone free ice cream. But yeah, that's a funny story. Auburn does it different in Columbus, Georgia, I guess. I wasn't expected to play there. Hostile environment, to say the least. I wish I got my hands on their trigger promotions before the game. If I knew 6 goals was the over-under, I would have been trying a lot harder with a second left, I guess.
That is an all-time story right there. Shearson, you mentioned it, the amount of grad students that you guys have on the team. Yanger, can you kind of touch on like what the team dynamic is? Like, what's the locker room look like when you got 17, 18 year olds and then like 30, 31 year old grad students?
Surprisingly, it mixes pretty well. I was like a little bit shocked at first because my sophomore year the only grad guy we had is Max Mona, and he's now our head coach. But you know, that dynamic was a lot more younger of a dynamic. You add these grad guys in, and it's just like, whoa, like these guys have like lived life for a lot longer than a lot of the kids on our team have. And once, you know, the first week and like you get used to each other, like my junior year, once everyone got used to each other, I feel like that age kind of goes away. That age gap kind of goes away a little bit. They're just like another group of the boys. And I think everyone just kind of shoots the shit equally. You know, we'll talk about something and they're just like, here's like, oh yeah, like that's not how it was like 7 years ago when I was in college. And I'm like, oh, well, you really pulled that card out. Yeah. I mean, I feel like Shearson can attest to more of it. He's on the older side of the team. So I feel like he can attest to a little bit more.
I think the dynamic was just awesome. You know, if a freshman was bitching about filling the bottles, you had a 32-year-old married man being like, no, you're going to fill them, buddy. I don't care what Shearson tells you to do, but if I tell you to fill them, you're going to fill them. We had a 16-year-old for the first couple months of our season last year. Keep out for his name, by the way. Dom. Great player, number 8 on Vanderbilt. But I mean, the grad students were really good about not just mentoring the younger guys, but making them feel comfortable at Vandy, whether it's just, you know, spending practices together on Wednesday nights or, you know, road trips on the weekends. The grad students were never too cool to be hanging out with the younger kids. And, you know, honestly, they were always the ones most excited about getting out of town for the weekend and checking out a new college campus and what it has to offer. So great dynamic between, you know, the older guys and the younger talent coming in. It was fun to experience the last 2 years for sure.
And I definitely think it like helped the younger guys feel more comfortable on the team just because it was like, I feel like if I was a freshman coming in and it was just all like, you know, 22-year-old college kids, maybe I'm a little bit more intimidated. But if there's like a 28-year-old guy just like, you know, giving me life advice, I feel like that's a little bit of a different dynamic. So the locker room culture definitely improved once we got more grad guys on the team for sure.
Well, I gotta ask about one of those grad students because I played against him growing up. What does Harrison Parent bring to the table?
Speedy fourth line winger. He shouldn't be a fourth liner, but he was kind of on that line at the end of the season, just kind of pulling around his line mates, trying to generate some offense. But speedy energy guy, not afraid to lay the body. Doesn't exactly have the silkiest paws out there. When he shoots, he scores usually. And also, I got to throw it in there. Sorry, Harrison, but arguably the worst Sellies of all time. He mixes like 18 different ones into one. And it looks like he's like throwing up gang signs almost.
He also brings a lot of metal music to the table. So
yeah, I mean, not an ox guy. Love you though. Harrison.
I'm just glad he's finally got a black cage because growing up playing against him, he had the True Vision combo going. So I'm glad to see the Vandy boys upgraded his style a little bit.
He was able to make that adjustment.
Yang made it clear that he wasn't going to get any Instagram content without a black cage. So smart to throw it on.
That is a good social media manager right there. And that transitions to our next topic because we got to talk about the new jerseys for this past season. And Yanger, I'm sure you were the man behind that. walk us through the kind of design process of coming up with these jerseys, because I'm sure you guys have to like scratch and claw to use like the Vandy logo on anything you do. So like, what did that process look like?
Full disclaimer, I'll give Shearson and Emmett Kapesser a lot of credit for doing most of the heavy lifting. The whole logo situation with Vanderbilt, I mean, I'm sure so many schools, you know, club hockey programs can relate, but they just have such like an arm on what logos and word marks we can and can't use and what colors they are. So we designed jerseys going into my sophomore year, and it was just like, oh, change the stripe design, change the logos, change where this is placed, change the nut. Like, they have a lot of control because, you know, at the end of the day, they get the sign off on whatever Rebirth sends them. As far as like the whole design process, when I was like kind of brainstorming with Shearson, was just like, you know, a couple of years ago, we saw a blackout jersey made by some Instagram account. And so we wanted to take inspiration from that and a more minimalist design and try to go for a sleeker look, especially with when Vanderbilt changed the logos. We wanted to try to work with what we had and try to make a more nicer design with what a lot of people thought of the logo. So
I think he hit it right on the head. I think all black kind of unis just always kind of look good and intimidating, and especially club hockey, it's kind of easier to get everyone kind of just have black gear rather than, you know, something else. So we were kind of just rocking with the black gloves, black cage, black helmet look, and it looked good with the blacks, and we were happy with the way the whites came out too. And yeah, in years prior, we kind of felt like the uniforms were kind of doing too much, and we kind of just wanted to make it more simple and sleek, as Yang put it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys knocked out of park, especially too, because I feel like when you see like uniforms in the SEC, like people, I mean, maybe when it comes to baseball, people are throwing out Vandy. In other sports, like, I feel like Vandy kind of falls to the bottom of the totem pole in terms of like cleanest looking jerseys. I think you guys knocked out of the park, like a traditional college looking jersey, like you mentioned, Shearson, not trying to do too much. And I think, you know, when people see it, they automatically know it's Vanderbilt. Yanger, we got to talk about, I looked at the box score. I know that this one didn't go your way, but you guys got to play Middle Tennessee at F&M Bank Arena, which is a brand new building in Tennessee. What was that whole thing like?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great experience. I was blown away by how many people were able to come out. I think like the end count by the ring was like 500 or something, which is, I think that's the biggest crowd I've ever played in front of personally. Yeah, I mean, it was like great just to be able to kind of like skate there. I mean, it's a brand new facility, so, you know, it felt a lot more legitimate than playing in a practice rink or you know, at some of the older rinks in the South. We definitely tried to ride the crowd as best as we could, and I think part of it was also like we let the game before get in our heads a little bit. I mean, we beat them on Friday like 5-1, so I think we were going in that game with like, you know, a bigger head than we should have had on our shoulders, and yeah, kind of just threw that game away. But yeah, I mean, like they put on a full production for us, like video board, like replays and stuff like that, and you know, the fans were getting into it too, and there's some pretty cool photos from that game that we could throw on our Instagram and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, it was like, it's like, you know, we try to take those opportunities to play in front of, you know, crowds or big arenas and whatnot. So yeah, it was a lot of fun as a player for sure.
Vandy's going to be playing Duke in an outdoor game next year in Charlotte, I believe. They got a Bridgestone game at Bridgestone, so downtown Nashville, too, in store. So stay tuned for those. And yeah, we'll definitely keep you updated with that, Mac, as well. But something to look out for.
We need more of these club hockey games and these big venues. Kind of off topic, I didn't really have any notes on this. I'm sure you guys have kind of, you know, been keeping up on the news. Tennessee State adding a team, right? Like, yeah, that's right in your backyard. Have they come to you guys for anything, or are you just, you know, kind of on the outside like everybody else, kind of watching what they're doing?
I think we're definitely more on the outside looking in as of now. I mean, they haven't really reached out to us, but they have a lot of support from their athletic department, which, you know, we wish we could have, even though they're in the very early stages. You know, they're definitely taking long strides to legitimize their program and doing it and building a program the right way for sure.
It was also really cool to see the Preds kind of shout them out at the draft last year and kind of get their program off its hinges. Yeah, first HBCU team to, you know, college to have a team. So that's pretty cool. And I think Vanderbilt would be stoked to kind of get them on their schedule whenever they're ready to play. If they're listening to this, anybody over there, I'm sure Vandy would be eager to take the ice with you guys.
Oh yeah, especially, I mean, if we're talking about having a game at Bridgestone, I feel like that's got to be in the picture for sure. We did skip over, we talked about the new jerseys and we kind of got into last season a bit. You almost shocked the world on opening night last year against Tampa, one of the best teams in the country. This was a game where I like checked the score and I was like, oh, maybe that was probably just the end of the first period. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, like I got to tune into this game. I remember, I think I was in my room on Friday night. I wasn't doing anything. And, you know, last weekend of September, like not many teams have started their season at that point. And then I was like, oh my gosh, like Vandy is giving these guys a game. Shearson, I'll throw it over to you because I'm sure you had to make a ton of saves in this one.
Yeah. So Julian talked about kind of, you know, operating the team in the president role, but I took over after him. He helped me along most of the way, but I kind of took the torch over from him. And so like kind of the cocky, confident kid I am, I scheduled like the hardest schedule in all of South College hockey. Tampa, 3 times week one. All the kids on the team were like, dude, what are you doing? Like, they're nasty. Like, we're going to get smoked. Like, this is going to be horrible. We tie them 2-1. And at the end of that game, I kid you not, like, their goalie's scrambling. We hit the crossbar. Like, the kitchen sink's just getting poured on this Tampa team. And we gave them a run. We got smoked by them the next 2 nights, 10-1, 14-1. We don't have to talk about that. But I was sitting in the locker room after that first game of the season, and I was just like, yeah, you guys can tell you. I told you so. We're here to compete. We didn't end up beating any of the D1 teams we played, but if you looked at the box scores for all the game, they're mostly one goal games besides you, Tampa. You guys were definitely too good for us. So kudos to you.
You did mention that too. You know, one of the best teams. We can glaze over the scores of the Saturday and Sunday games, but a 3-3 is tough to open the season, especially against a team like that. Yanger, I want to throw it to you though, because it sounds like we had some almost hotel problems on the Ole Miss trip this year.
For some context, like Ole Miss, they play about an hour from their campus in Olive Branch, which is like kind of in the sticks of Memphis, like southern Memphis, like right over the border of Tennessee and Mississippi. And so Shears and I were driving down. We got there kind of early. So we pull into the hotel and I'm like, yo, this is not bad of an area. I thought like, you know, where we were was going to be a little bit worse and sketchier, but we pull into the hotel and there's just a gate in front of their parking lot. And I'm like, I just turn to Shears. I'm like, what's this? Like, why do they have a gate? Cause they obviously have it for a reason. And I'm not too stoked at like what that reason might be. We'll just like put this in the, like, not let this distract us before we're supposed to play in like a couple hours here. So the rink does a public skate before, like about for an hour and a half. And then we warm up on that like dirty ice. Like they don't cut the ice for us. So we go out and like, everyone's just like, no one's having it. Like pucks are just not, of course they're used to it. So it's like a little bit different, but like we're going out there, pucks aren't sliding. Everyone's just in a bad mood. Somehow like we scrapped a win from that game. Like probably played like some of the worst hockey that we played that season. And somehow we scrapped the win. You know, shout out to Shears, was definitely a brick wall in that. I think he saved that win for us. So got to give credit to Shears, of course. But the game's over. It's like almost midnight because like the game, you know, they start their games at like 9:30. Boys go out to get some food. You know, guys are hungry. Like, you know, didn't really get dinner before the game or whatnot. And I had some food before that I just kept in my fridge. So, you know, I went to bed, you know, at like 3 or 4 in the morning. I get a knock on the door. Is this like one of the boys? Like, is he trying to mess with us? Is he like, yo, like, yeah, you're come out and like, come out and hang out with us. Like, so I like kind of just ignored it. I was like, yeah, this isn't like, I'll deal with this in the morning if someone was kind of angry at me for not hanging out with the boys. And so in the morning, you know, I'm going out to get some food and I go out and there's just 4 cop cars, a bunch of broken glass on the road and like just yellow police tape just everywhere. And I'm like, what the hell happened here last night?
So while Yang was being, you know, the responsible captain in the room, you know, getting some sleep, the other captain was downstairs having some beers with the boys. There's a couple beers and eating burgers in the lobby. And then one of our grad students kind of runs in like a kid in the candy shop and is like, dude, all our cards are getting broke into right now. Like, we got to get out there. Like 15 guys in our team just start running out, started to screaming like we're about to charge at this guy, which probably wouldn't have been the best idea for someone who's breaking into cars, considering, you know, they're getting into the car with some mechanism or another. But yeah, we see this guy like with a bag full of shit hop over 2 fences wearing all black, just booked it. And we're like, what just fucking happened? And as Yang said, I don't know how we won that game. We played horrible. And Yang left out a part of the story that I tried to get him to incorporate, was that Olive Branch Rink had a public skate before with like weird neon lights. They didn't do the ice before our warm-ups. None of us could skate. The game was a shit show before it even started. We get to the parking lot and every single car in the parking lot, literally besides the Vandy Club Hockey kids, was broken into. None of our cars got touched for whatever reason. It was our lucky day. We celebrated it. We definitely lost to them the next night, which was pretty pathetic. So it was a fun weekend, and we got really lucky that Friday night, though.
It's funny, too, because I was scrolling through the Vandy Hockey Instagram, like looking at the post from last season. I saw the video of you skating onto the ice for dirty warmups because I was like, wow, like there's a lot of snow on that ice.
It was so bad. It was horrible.
Vandy is different from a lot of the other SEC schools in that your campus is in a major city, right? Like Nashville. What are the bars like? And are there college bars? Are there Vandy bars? Like, what does that situation look like? Are you guys going downtown where all the tourists go? What is kind of like an ideal weekend for the boys on the Vandy hockey team?
Yanger rips Broadway all the time, you know. I have to drag Yanger down the Aldean steps at like 3 a.m. most weekends. But no, I'm just kidding. But mostly Broadway bars for the most part. There's a stretch of bars in Midtown right off of Division, right off of campus. That's a little more low-key bars. Nashville's got bars everywhere, but the kids definitely go to all the touristy places, which kind of makes me sick and which made me excited to graduate Vandy by the time I was done because I was tired of going to Miranda Lambert's.
Good thing about Midtown is it's a lot cheaper. So if you're looking for some cheap beers and good place, I will say Midtown's definitely good. Shout out Red Door Saloon. A lot of the boys go there. So it's a good spot for a lot of Vandy guys.
Great post-dub spot. And we didn't get too many of those to celebrate. So Red Door always treated us well.
There we go. We got to make sure we give them a plug in here. Kind of getting back to the season here. One thing that, you know, from an outside perspective, you know, we talk about a lot of teams, but I'm like trying to think, like, when did we talk about Vandy on the pod this year? And the thing that immediately stands out is this series against Clemson, because Clemson writes this article ahead of the game that's basically like, no concerns for the Tigers this weekend. Like, they're going to Vanderbilt, and you guys ended up sweeping them. We get this hilarious Instagram troll video afterwards with Shearson, basically the star of the video. Yanger, I'll throw it over to you, but like, what do you remember from that weekend? Did you guys see this article ahead of time?
The Thursday before our Friday game, Shearson sends like a screenshot and a link to the chat, and he's like, they fucked up here, boys. Like, they don't know what they're getting themselves into. And like, going into that weekend, it was like, because we were like, that was a big turning point for us, because it was like, if we lose that any of those games, I think our season would have been cooked, because you know, our first half of the season was like mediocre at best. But yeah, I mean, like, we drive like 5.5 hours in the pouring rain to Clemson. And it was just like, we showed up, like, guys showed up like 20 minutes before, cause you know, the weather was slowing us down. And you know, we had like my buddy and I, like when we were driving down, we almost like hydroplaned like 3 times going through the Smoky Mountains and into South Carolina too. So yeah, South Carolina's roads weren't very trained for that trip, but nah, we were definitely fired up, and it gave our coach a lot of ammo to work with for his pregame speech. But yeah, we like, you know, I'm going in because like, I don't remember like, you know, what Clemson was like. We played them 2 years ago, so it was like a completely different team. But we go up like 2-0 after the first period. And I'm like, whoa, like what is going on? And then we just kept pumping like goals. And like, I think we ended up winning that game like 6-1 or something. Same for the next game, like, you know, 3-0. It was a lot closer, but there was a lot of interesting moments from that series. I think their commentator had some words to say, right, Cheers?
Their commentator is this dude named Razor Sharp, who literally might have been my biggest fan of all time. He was gassing me up the whole broadcast. I get off the ice after the games, and my parents are like, you got to go say hi to this guy. Like, he adores you. Look at the broadcast, and he's just glazing me. Like I've never seen anybody glaze like anybody harder in my life. And so I'm like, wow, they're like, this guy's awesome. What a good guy. Apparently, when I'm leaving the rink after the second game, a couple of the parents on the Clemson team were like, if you fucking like Vanderbilt so much, go fucking commentate their games next year. So we're just like, I'm like, come on, man. Like, why are you doing my man dirty? He's just giving me my flowers. Me and a couple of the older guys, because Clemson doesn't play on campus, we drove 40 minutes to their campus and spent the night over there. Because we're like, you know, we don't get a sweep often in club hockey, and Clemson's a pretty cool college town, so let's go check it out. And yeah, we had a couple beers down there. We ran into their team. Their team, shout out the Clemson team last year, bunch of class acts, really nice guys. Took us under their wings a night into town after we swept them. And it was funny because, you know, we were making fun of them for the no concerns. They got our number in nationals. They beat us, and they were going no concerns too. So they got the last laugh. We really liked that team, though. It was a mutual respect there for sure, unlike a couple of our other rivals. Yeah, we went out into town, and like, I thought I was like a celebrity sitting at an Omnia nightclub in Vegas, just like thinking I was the man. A couple of my grad student friends who didn't play as much were like lying and saying they were all the goal scorers to a couple of the girls at the bar. So it was funny. Made a huge joke of the whole weekend, but it was definitely one of my highlights, and the rest of the teams as well.
I think it was funny too, because like Shearson or like one of the grad guys, they found out, they had no idea that article was even being run in the first place. And like, if you actually read the article, the headline completely just misconstrued what their players were saying. I think what they were trying to say was like, oh, if we just stick with our systems, like we're not concerned that, you know, it'll fail us. The journalist just goes, yeah, Clemson has no concerns ahead of Vanderbilt. I'm like, dude, that's like, I feel so bad because like they just come, we were giving them so much shit and just like ripping them and like chirping them the entire game after we beat them.
And they had no clue
what was going on. And I'm like, yeah, like after I was like, oh, I feel so bad. Like, that's not their fault at all.
That's club hockey in a nutshell, is like, yeah, you have players like running the teams and scheduling the games, but you also have like freshmen and sophomores in college like writing articles about these teams, right? Because like they're trying to work their way up too. So, you know, this poor person is trying to write an article about the upcoming series. It probably gets way more clicks than any other article they had leading up to that. But Yanger, you would probably have a little insight into this, because I know you, we've talked about the social media a couple times, and this video that gets put out after the fact was pretty funny. But I want to know, what was your favorite piece of content that you put out in your time behind the keys?
Probably that jersey reveal video going into senior year. I think like that was the highest like value production that I made. It took a lot of coordination, a lot of like scripting, a lot of just writing and brainstorming and whatnot. And I think that video, like the storyboarding really started back in like June and July, which was like a full like 2 months before we even like had the opportunity to shoot. I put a lot of effort in just trying to like put together like a good storyboard, something that would like capture the like our audiences and our social media team, like especially Connor. You know, he put a lot of effort in as well, and just kind of like being there and helping me make that, turn that idea into something that you know, became what it is. But in the 2.5 years, 3 years that I was running it while we were playing, yeah, that was probably my favorite piece of content.
Yeah, that was a sweet video that Yanger worked together, that worked really hard on. It got a whole lot of attention, honestly. I felt like a lot of people were clicking on it and interacting with it. So yeah, we were proud to kind of get that piece of work out there. And then yeah, Connor Campbell did a great job with that kind of meme collage after the Clemson video and a bunch of other stuff. So big shout out to Connor Campbell on our media team for helping too.
You know, with the whole jerseys thing, like, you know, he helped us do the Broadway photo shoot, which ended up on Bleacher Report. So yeah, I mean, like just the amount of attention that we were able to get off of that jersey reveal and the amount of effort that Connor put in the last few years he's been here, it's incredible.
So Shearson, I got to ask, the team makes the national tournament for the first time in the 48-year program. Do you think that has to do with the tough schedule? The strength of schedule maybe helped the team down the road?
So that was my philosophy. People didn't really buy it right away. But yeah, I think it definitely helped, you know, not losing all those games to the D1 teams, but kind of just proving to ourselves that, hey, if we can skate with these guys, like we can skate with the best in D2 for sure. But yeah, we had a great team. Everyone kind of pitched in towards the end of the season. It wasn't, you know, a couple guys up front or, you know, me or, you know, a couple defensemen on the back end. Literally everyone was contributing. And everyone was having a lot of fun too. We played our best hockey when we were kind of just like playing with the house's money, like going into Clemson, you know, going into Tennessee, losing in overtime and then beating them the next night. We were giving a lot of teams a lot of, you know, just a hard time, just making other people's lives very difficult out on there in the ice. Played a very simple game. If you watched our style of play, it's not the most glamorous, but we play the game hard. I think you can expect that for Vanderbilt in years to come. You know, just maybe not necessarily the most skilled team, but probably the hardest working team.
I got to ask you, you guys dropped that first game against Bishops, and I actually just went back and watched your post-game interview. Was that, have you done a post-game interview before? Because you looked like a grizzled 13-year NHL vet in that interview.
My dad was standing over to the right-hand side behind the interviewer, who was kind of a rocket, by the way. But so I was trying to give him some laughs and some memories of my last weekend kind of playing competitive hockey. Yeah, I like to act like I've been there before, right?
Well, you're giving the interview. Meanwhile, Yanger's defending himself in the Hockey House Pod comment sections for his actions on the empty net goal by Bishops.
Yeah, you know, thought I'd add a little bit of spice to the playoffs and in the national tournament. You know, I thought it was a little disrespectful that he blew a kiss and whatnot, so I thought I'd give him my thoughts and share my opinions on how I felt about that. But a little bit of pushback from the Bishops crowd, to say the very least. A lot of other random accounts that decided to, you know, chime in as well. most of them in support of Bishops. So thought I'd have a little bit of fun there and spice it up a little bit.
Vandy hockey might have lost a couple followers that day too on the gram.
Yanger took it in the chin, figuratively and literally.
I get back to the hotel. I just remember Shade Korean is just like, Yanger, like, what are you doing, man? Like, it's like, you shouldn't have said that, man. I was like, dude, like, they were going to chirp me either way. Cause like, you know, I gotta, so why not just like, why not put my own thoughts out there and get ahead of it before the whole crowd starts chirping from the stands.
But I think the highlight of your run at Nationals though, was the game against Liberty. You guys are down 4-3. Heading into the third period. Maybe the turning point of this game is Shearson just hanging out on top of the crossbar and that picture goes viral. And then all of a sudden you guys tie it up and then you take the lead to hang on. I got to ask again, Shearson, is that something you've done before? Or are you just trying to make the most of your final days as a college hockey player?
I don't know, man. I'm weird. It is funny during the Bishops game too, during play stoppage, me and my Bishops goalie were just saucing the puck back and forth. So yeah, just trying to, you know, be a sponge out there, you know, embrace my last couple of games. So I replaced Yang as president. And then the kid that replaced me is this kid named Eric Russenberger, who transferred from Liberty and actually got cut from that team. And so he was out on the ice for that game winning goal. And that was one of the cooler moments of the year because that game meant a lot to him. But getting that win for him. And it was funny because we had one of our grad students who's 20 or 31 dislocated his shoulder trying to stop the empty net against Bishops. But against Liberty, late in the game, he rips a clapper, just throws his shoulder out, and again, just the most furta play of all time. It was like Doug Glatt getting his face jammed into on the goal line stand. It was literally almost as furt as that. It was just a sick end of that game. And just to get a win at Nationals, we didn't bring our whole team there. So that win felt like, you know, a weekend sweep, honestly.
Ross was telling me before that weekend, he was like, I don't care what happens. I just want to beat Liberty. I don't care, like, if we go 1-2, if we lose all the games, if we get blown out, like, that doesn't mean anything to me. Like, my sole goal for this weekend is to go out there and get a win. That's the most hype I've ever seen him after a game. And I mean, everyone was super hyped for him too. And, you know, coach definitely made sure to hammer home that point going into the third period. He's like, you know, just to give us a little extra rally. It's like, yeah, give Russ something to play for and cheer for after the game. So, you know, go out there and give it everything you got.
And so you guys wrap up your season, but Shearson, you got a couple more games to play. You got to represent College Hockey South as an all-star. I'm glad that for the first time in your college career, your pads got to match the jerseys. That was a nice tribute to end your college career.
Amen to that for sure. I didn't want to be that, you know, kid that customizes pads just for my last 2 years of, you know, especially club. I already had the nice Middlebury gear, sparked conversation with the other team just to get in their head a little more. People like to comment on that. But yeah, that weekend was a lot of fun. My team was loaded, you know, we had a lot of the FAU, you know, Tampa, and then all the D1 kids. But yeah, just a stacked team. We blew every team out of the water besides for that Empire team. But yeah, the second game, one of my Vanderbilt friends who graduated lives in Miami, and our other buddy flew down to kind of hang out with us for the weekend. And we made a little boys trip out of it. And we were in Delray Beach till like 3 or 4 a.m. that Friday night. My team played at 8 a.m. that Saturday morning. I made sure to set like 12 alarms. I woke up like right at the start of the first period. My buddy had to drive me all the way to the rink 20 minutes away from where we were staying in Pompano Beach. And I literally am like falling over, putting my gear on because I'm supposed to play the second period. Me and my goalie partners were only playing a period each. And my teammates are like, holy fuck, like, is this kid kidding? Like, he can't even get dressed right now. I give up like 3 goals on 4 shots that game. Luckily, my team carried and we won like 15-6. I made sure the rest of the weekend to stay sober and pitch in my end too. And I like to think I played all right the last 2 games to get my team a chance at the hardware, which we did. So it was a fun weekend.
Well, that was gonna be my next question, is like, who are you hanging out with all weekend? Because you're the only Vandy guy. Did you make friends with guys from other teams? Was there a guy maybe you hated to play against that maybe you became friends with over the weekend?
I mean I definitely wasn't a celebrity walking into that locker room on the first day. I like to think the Tennessee kid Colin Frazier, we would go at it when we played each other, but we had a couple of good laughs in the locker room. And then the FAU guys didn't like me. I was barking the whole time we played them in the playoff game, and they ended up scoring 5 goals in the third, so they definitely got the last laugh. So I didn't have much talking to do in the locker room. They made my lives easier by, you know, not letting us beat them. It was a really fun time, and something to keep your eye out for. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say this or not, but apparently that team that won, the CHS white team, supposed to go to Europe in early January to play a bunch of like maybe Belarus's third team or something. But yeah, I'm trying to cash in on my free ticket. So Kyle Nell, if you're listening, I'm holding you accountable, buddy.
There we go. get those pads a couple more uses before it's time for men's league. Are you going to keep playing men's league?
I think that's the plan. I'm staying in Nashville, so I'm trying to find a couple leagues to play in right now. Just throwing my name out there at the ring. Just looking forward to, you know, playing the men's league, grind the next couple of years.
Yanger, what's your favorite place to play on the road? We'll start with that one.
I think Tennessee was a lot of fun to play at just because of the atmosphere. They definitely brought the crowd. And I mean, even though we were playing the smaller rink, it was really packed and like, you know, they brought their fans and they brought the energy. Yeah, I'd probably say Tennessee, but you know, the same goes for MTSU. They bring it to every single game that we play against them too, especially when we're Antioch. So those two places, you know, facilities wise, maybe not as good as like F&M or some of the other CHS teams and what they have to offer. But in terms of energy, like MTSU and Tennessee definitely bring the most.
Tennessee's Rocky Top. If you don't like that song by the Osborne Brothers, you're kind of just a loser. So even when they were scoring on me and bumping that song, they had a Dolly Parton pre-recorded anthem too. So it was just like the most Knoxville kind of extravaganza when you go down and play them.
No way they had the Dolly Parton recording.
Yep. And then the old school Rocky Top goal song, it was pretty elite. And that first night they beat us, they scored with 20 seconds left to tie it. And then they beat us in overtime by pushing me into the net with the puck. And then that next day we beat them and I didn't get to hear Rocky Top. So I was a little disappointed because I shut him out, but it was bittersweet.
I'm sure you guys were blasting that in the locker room when you got back anyways.
Allegedly.
All right. Now here's the follow-up question, because I don't know if you guys saw, we did an Instagram post today. It was Rory after losing the other day. And it was like, when your coach says there's not enough money in the budget to go to FGCU. And then that sparked some conversation. Like, what are some of the best places in club hockey to travel to? And I think you guys have got to be a top 10 destination in that, right? Like, what's the pitch for maybe some teams listening? Why should they schedule a game at Vandy?
If you want to get drunk at Broadway and have a good time, telling you, Nashville's the place to be. If you don't have the budget to travel to Florida or Vegas, I think Nashville is a hot destination for you.
But if you're looking for a bye week, go the fuck somewhere else too, because it's not going to be an easy two games when you come play us, especially that Saturday after you're out on the Friday, because we'll catch you sleeping in the first.
We like to take advantage of the Nashville flu. We played UCF my junior year in like game two. They were so drunk coming back. So
we had a 3 or 4 series this year where we were playing SEC teams at home and we played Friday, Sunday so that team could, you know, go to the game at Vandy and then go to Broadway with their team, just trying to, you know, have some courtesy and get them the best weekend, not so we could beat them on the Sunday. I invited a couple of those kids on those team. They would come to my fraternity's tailgates and like have some beers with us. We weren't just hoping they'd get drunk. We were also, you know, drinking beers with them too, to make sure that they weren't going to be at their best on the Sunday.
I appreciate all the insights on Vandy hockey here. This has been, we've gotten more than our money's worth here. It was a long time coming to get you guys on, but I'm glad we could finally make it work.
Yeah. Thank you for having us on. It's been a lot of fun just shooting the shit and telling the stories from our years in the team for sure.
Yeah. Thanks, Mac. Keep your eyes out for Vandy guys. Big things to come. Thanks for having us.
Again, shout out to Julian Yang and Andrew Shearson for jumping on, giving us the inside scoop on Vanderbilt hockey. Just some all-time club hockey stories from that episode. And it brings us to our third and final hot seat of the week. And we're sticking with the social media because Yanger brought up a great point in the interview. Teams who post photos with brutal style on social media. He talked about my good buddy Harrison Parent. They wouldn't post him on the Instagram because he had the chrome cage. And I think that's just hilarious. Like we talk about, we always trying to, you know, provide the best image of the ACHA and AAU college hockey. And I think it's so funny that they went as far as to tell this guy, hey, you're not going to be featured on the Instagram if you don't get a new cage. So I thought that was great. Fitzy, I know the chrome cage is close to your heart, so I wanted to throw it over to you because we got a mini question ahead of our question of the week. But what's one piece of style that you had growing up that you wish you could have gone back and changed?
I was always the chrome cage guy, but I'll give you a different one. I always rocked the flop with the tongues on my skates, and it just looks so much cleaner. I didn't change it till I got to Binghamton, actually. My first year at Binghamton, I actually tucked them under the shin pad. I felt like I was like +1 speed after that. Never used clear tape until then. It was like a whole new ball game. So it wasn't just the looks. I felt faster, but yeah, I would change the flop.
It's funny you mentioned clear tape. I've been doing this new trick in men's league because, you know, I've gotten to the point where I'm reaching in the bag and there's just no clear tape anymore. Like I just got like 2 rolls of black and like half a roll of thick white. And I'm like, geez, like how am I going to do this? So again, style guy. So I've actually been putting the shin guard on and then taping the shin guard with the black tape underneath the sock. So you're still getting the same amount of support. You just can't see the sock tape. It's working like a charm for me. I kind of wish I had learned this hack a little bit sooner in my hockey career. Probably would have saved a couple extra bucks on less clear tape. So Collins, I'll throw it to you as a goalie. Is there any piece of style you had growing up that you wish you could go back and change?
There hasn't been much evolution, I guess, in goalie style aside from like some of the atrocious custom pads. Rick DiPietro's pink and Islanders camo for like a breast cancer game that were just absolutely horrendous. But one thing I did have, you couldn't tell it was a wood stick, but it was a wood stick. So this was like 2014, something like that. And the foam core graphite goalie sticks were nowhere near as durable as they are now. So like I was playing with wood because my parents did not want to like keep replacing goalie sticks. Yeah, so I had a Warrior Swagger 2 wooden goalie stick. And the thing was just so fucking heavy. My arms would get so tired.
The reason I asked this question is because my buddy and I were going back and forth today, like talking about old hockey memories from youth hockey. And I was looking at some old photos of me from high school. And I was like, dang, like I kind of had brutal style. And I guess like at the time it was like the cool style. But if I could go back and change a couple of things, like I wore a cage in high school. I had worn the fishbowl and bantams, and then I switched to the cage and then ditched the cage after high school. Obviously, I would probably go back and rock the bubble longer. Did you have this as a kid? Like when you're going up in shoe size every year when you go back to school shopping, and then you kind of get to a point where you realize you've gotten sneakers that are too big for you. You just maybe assumed that you were going up a size every year. And then all of a sudden you're not an 11, you're more of a 10 and you got to go back down a size. Like I remember, I think I got to the point where I thought I was a 12 and then I was like, once I tried on 11s, then they fit perfectly. And I was like, wait a second, why have I been wearing shoes that are too big? Like I had that happen to me, but with my hockey helmet. All through high school, I wore a size large helmet on the smallest setting. It was when I was home during COVID. I put on my sister's helmet and it fit me and she wore a medium. And the medium on the biggest setting fit much better than the large on the smallest setting. I know I'm throwing a lot of terms out there, but it was this realization that growing up, my head just looked huge in my helmets. I looked like a bobblehead, and it was all just because I was wearing the wrong sized helmet that entire time. In hindsight, I would probably go back and change that. The other thing too is the way I had to wear the cage on the tightest setting. So I had like reverse cage hang because I had to wear the cage as tight as it was to fit my helmet because I was wearing a helmet that was way too big for me.
One thing I do regret, having the plastic dangler. Certain guys can rock it, like Braden Holtby, those kind of goalies. When I was younger, I would wear it, and I didn't wear a foam neck guard like I do now.
That leads us to our question of the week. I know a good conversation about hockey style never goes out of style, talking about style. So we'll throw it over. We do have an interesting development. It appears that the Big Ten has announced that I think they're going to have 6 games at Wrigley Field following the Winter Classic this season. Of course, going back to Wrigley, the Blackhawks will host the Winter Classic once again at Wrigley for the second time. Should be an exciting time. And of course, now there's rumblings about which Big Ten teams are going to get to play. So we chimed in on the conversation. Hey, there's plenty of Big Ten teams in the ACHA. Maybe we should give some of these teams a shot to play at Wrigley. So I'll throw it over to you, Fitz, as a resident Big Ten expert. Which ACHA programs would you like to see square off at Wrigley Field?
I think you know where I'm going. Michigan, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State. You couldn't go wrong with either of those. But I will pick another one. Indiana versus Purdue, I think would be sick. I never got to play Purdue. I don't know do they have a Division II ACHA team?
They just have a D3 team. And the D3 team's usually solid and goes to nationals. So I think, I mean, that would probably be a pretty good matchup anyways.
Sure. Or even the Indiana, they have a D3 team too. I know they play Purdue. So yeah, any of those teams would be pretty fun to watch.
Collins, who are you throwing in at Wrigley Field?
I am going to be throwing in the Maryland Terrapins and Penn State. I am recently a Maryland fan since my brother is headed there in the fall. I was like thinking about it, and like Maryland doesn't really have a true rival in the Big Ten. I mean, they say it's Penn State, but Penn State also kind of doesn't have a true rival. Penn State thinks it's Ohio State, but Ohio State's true rival is Michigan. I just thought that Penn State would be a good one, a good border rivalry. Wrigley Field, weird place to have it, but yeah.
Well, it's funny. You went with the East Coast matchup. Herm's not here tonight, but he picked USC versus UCLA at Wrigley. So if we're going to get that East, look, I mean, we're hitting for the cycle right now because Fitzy's going with the Indiana matchup, Midwest matchup at Wrigley. Collins is going with an East Coast matchup, Maryland, Penn State. Herm's going West Coast, USC, UCLA. I feel bad because when we did this post the other day, I left one team out of this post and I had them queued up and completely forgot to put them in the post. And that's the Iowa Hawkeyes. So I'm going to go with Iowa versus Nebraska at Wrigley. And these two teams play each other in football for the Heroes Trophy. And do you guys remember that animated movie, Everyone's a Hero, about that kid who goes and plays for the Cubs? So I figured what better than to have the Heroes Trophy on the ice at Wrigley. So I think that'd be a really good one, especially Nebraska moving up to ACHA M2 next season. So get a little bit of a Midwest Big Ten M2 rivalry game going there. So we're getting ready to wrap things up with our segment 611 thoughts here. Speaking of Big Ten, we do have the Big Ten Showcase coming in November. This has been rumored for a while now. Has our friend Joe Caprio written all over it. The goal is to have all the Big Ten ACHA teams in Chicago for a showcase in November. We'd heard rumblings about this, but it became official when Iowa released their schedule on Tuesday and revealed games the weekend before Thanksgiving against Michigan State and Washington. So not only are we going to get some of the teams from the Midwest that we're used to seeing in the Big Ten, but some of those West Coast teams are going to make the trip as well. Can't wait to see what teams make the trip. I hope they get as many as they can from the Big Ten, but that'll be an exciting showcase, especially to get some of those big branded schools together playing under one roof. So keep an eye out. That kind of wraps up the show. A lot of content this week. Again, we'll do our best to bring you another show next week. We had a great guest with the boys from Vandy joining us as well, but we thank you as always for tuning into this one. If you need anything, you know where to find us. Shoot us a DM at Hockey House Pod across all platforms. We'll see you next week.
See you, boys.